VentureCast.
So I think that leadership is something that we should keep alive, and we should accept that there's value in learning more about it. Assuming that we're in a leadership position and therefore we know leadership, I think is the start of a problem.
Hi, and welcome to Deep Leadership. I'm your host, John Rennie. Well, I hope all is well with you today. It is another beautiful day here in North Carolina, and this episode is brought to you by our sponsors, Ignite Management Services and Liberty Strength. These sponsors help me bring these shows to you each and every week, so I encourage you to click on their links below and check them out. Also, I want to remind you that the Qualified Leadership Book Series, which includes all three of my best-selling leadership books, is now available on my website, johnsrennie.com. You get all three books for 15% off the Amazon and Barnes & Noble price, but this offer is only available on my website. Now, this is the perfect Christmas gift for the leader or future leader in your family, so check it out at johnsrennie.com. Well, that is it. Today, we're going to be talking about how to overcome obstacles, and my guest is Bob Pierce. Bob is a retired colonel from the British Army, where he served for 37 years. He's written a new book called How to Climb a 12-Foot Wall, 10 Military Lessons in Leadership, where he shares those leadership lessons he learned in 37 years of leading people in the military. Now, Bob is a remarkable man, and I enjoyed sitting down with him and learning from his vast leadership experience. I really enjoy getting to know Bob, and I know you will as well. So, are you ready to dive in? Let's get started.
Welcome to Deep Leadership. Leadership is a people business. That's the philosophy of your podcast host, John Rennie. As a former Cold War submarine officer who spent 20-plus years leading businesses in corporate America before starting his own manufacturing business, he knows that leadership matters. Leadership matters. Are you ready for some real-world, actionable advice from John as well as his expert guests?
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
The show starts right now.
Welcome to the Deep Leadership Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Bob Pierce. Bob joined the British Army as a 16-year-old apprentice, was commissioned before his 20th birthday, and left 37 years later as a colonel in the Royal Logistics Corps. He has commanded soldiers in training organizations, NATO deployments, and at war. He completed the All-Arms Commando course at the young age of 37 years old. He has a master's degree in leadership and management, a master's in corporate governance, in which he is now studying for a PhD. He's the author of How to Climb a 12-Foot Wall, 10 Military Lessons in Leadership, where he shares his unique leadership experiences that will apply to all walks of life. And I'm excited to have him on the show to learn from his expertise. So, Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Privileged to be on your show.
I think the honor is all mine. I'm really excited to meet you and to hear about your background, but also the book that you wrote, because I think, sharing your experiences, you're in the military, I think is one way that we can help all leaders get to be better. So first of all, tell us about your background and where you developed your passion for leadership.
Right. Well, you've just mentioned that I had a very long career in the Army. I joined when I was 16. And left 37 years later as a colonel. I think a couple of highlights, invariably in the Army, the highlights are the command tours. I commanded a squadron in the Ace Mobile Force Land, a deployable organization that used to be on short notice to move to go to the NATO flanks, and later commanded a logistic regiment, a transport regiment, in 2003 in the Iraq War. That regiment, British regiments are normally sort of 600 or 700 strong, and mine for that war was 1,200 soldiers, mainly because politics with a small p, there was an element of discussion with the MOD, no doubt, about how big the tail needed to be to support the teeth arm deployed. And they didn't want too many logistic regiments. So they deployed one regiment. It just was as big as two. but that, I suppose, notwithstanding other things that I did after that, was probably the highlight in my mind of my career, commanding those soldiers and having the an opportunity to command them and do the things that we were trained to do. My focus and passion for leadership comes from my time in the army and how we in the military across, you know, it's not just the British military, it would be the same in America and other NATO organizations. We focus on leadership. I joined at 16 and at 17 and a bit, I was going through the selection process to go to Sandhurst. And it was a 3-day test. We had academic tests, intellectual tests, physical tests. But the thing that they were looking for in a 17-year-old was leadership potential. Mm. And that's what they still look for in selecting people to go to Sandhurst. And then after that, in the army, you study leadership, you practice leadership, you refine your leadership thinking, you're promoted on leadership potential. It's something that we focus on a great deal. It's almost a natural thing, I suppose, to be thinking about leadership. But my sense when I see other organizations, I've worked in health and in education since leaving, is that there's a value put on other aspects of doing the job, on skills, on experience. There's a value given to long service in organizations. And these things do have value, and I don't dismiss them. But I sense that that focus on management potentially rather than valuing leadership is something that might be able to transfer from the military to other walks of life.
I absolutely love this point. I wrote it down as soon as you said it. Leadership, you know, they were looking for leadership potential. And one of the downfalls in, you know, I spent 22 years working for 3 global companies. And one of the things I saw, and probably similar to your experiences in health and education, which is promotions based on you take the best engineer, you make them the engineering manager. So you do it based on who is the best individual contributor, and you make them the manager or the leader of the organization. So we look for aptitude in that skill set, like accounting or sales, but we don't actually, we're not looking for leadership potential. And really, at the end of the day, that's really going to be your leader. Your best leader is the one that actually has demonstrated leadership potential. And so I love the fact that you mentioned that they were looking for that. And this is
right to the very early stage. Exactly. And at 17, I didn't have all those other experiences and there's value in them. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. But I think to assume that the best accountant, the best doctor or consultant or teacher or whatever it is, can therefore lead the organization, almost sets those people up for failure. We want those people to be successful. And I think as much energy and effort should go into developing their leadership as much as any of those other skills.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I had a friend tell me once to think about, like, the best coaches in sports were not always the best players in their past. You know, they're really good at coaching, not necessarily of playing. And I think that's something we all have to remember.
We should value that.
Yeah, we should value those that are in our organization that have that potential. So interesting. The one thing too, in your experience too, I would imagine similar to the American military, which is you, as you progress in ranks, you're given more and more responsibility. So you get a chance to practice leadership before you're given big leadership. Like the group you took to war was a very large, you know, over 1,000, a very large team, but you didn't get that on day one. That was over time you progressed. You were leading small teams and then eventually bigger and bigger teams, right, I imagine?
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember as a captain, I was due to be posted to another captain's job, a senior captain's job. And I was offered an opportunity to go to be promoted to major early and go off and do something really important, responsible for for soldiers. And I chose the captain's job. It was a job I wanted to do. But by the time I did get to command that squadron I was talking about, I was glad. It was only a difference of, I don't know, four or five years probably in time. But by the time I got to do that job, I had learned more things. I had done other things. And I think sometimes that process that we go through, that progress, has a real value. And you do learn all the way through. And as I've written in my book, you don't always learn from doing things right.
Yes.
Yeah. You learn by doing it again. The opportunity to command troops, whilst it's a great privilege, it's a huge responsibility. And you want to put people into those positions who have been tried and tested and developed as they've gone along. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's one thing I really missed about it when I came into the corporate world, because often people were promoted based, well, for random reasons, but not necessarily experience as a leader or experience, you know, progressive responsibility. And in the military, you always knew the people that commanded you had been in your shoes before. Yeah. They had walked in your shoes. So that always felt like you instantly had respect for your senior officers because they had been where you are now. And I think that was always stood out to me. There was always respect for those above you because of that. Yeah. So this book, your book is called How to Climb a 12-Foot Wall, 10 Military Lessons in Leadership. So how did it come about that you wrote this book?
Yeah. I didn't set out to write a book. And I imagine maybe lots of people sort of say that to you. I was sort of moved to write it probably after, it was after I'd left the army. I joined the National Health Service on a leadership program. It was a great privilege to go into this program they were looking to bring senior leadership into the health service. In fact, the program started with a month at Harvard. So we came across to Harvard and we learned about transforming and reimagining healthcare. We looked at examples across the world. We were learning from great people in Harvard. And it was a real great start and transition from the military into another sector. And in fact, just a quick aside, I met a chap there called Professor Heifetz, Ronnie Heifetz, who runs the Leadership Center at Harvard and has been doing so for about 40 years now. He gave a couple of lectures to our course. A fascinating opportunity to talk to somebody who'd been studying leadership from an academic perspective and running courses for a long time. Written books about adaptive leadership. He told us about a productive zone of disequilibrium, which what on earth does that mean? And he explained a bit about leaders being responsible. If you think of what you're trying to do as the group of people in a pressure cooker, the leader is responsible for turning the heat up or down and managing how those people react with each other in order to deliver their creative, productive, positive outcomes, but not to turn it up so much that it falls apart, that it goes out of control, it explodes. And it was a fascinating opportunity talking to him about leadership. But on that program, I found myself, having spent a long time in the army and now sitting in the health service, using stories to illustrate how I might address a problem, sort an issue out. And naturally, I think we all do that. If somebody starts to tell you a story, you start to think of something in your life that's similar. And stories are a great way of explaining concepts or approaches or experience. So I was using these stories, these dits, as we call them in the army. And I was asked I got known for these stories. Oh, Bob will tell us a story when he's done this. And I then was asked to talk to another program, another course that the NHS was running. And so I did a sort of presentation. So I had to write down these stories to make sure I got them right. I was then asked to record a couple in a bit of a discussion, a bit like this, for a National Health Service Chief Executives course. I was going to say, before I knew it, there was a book. It took about 6 years, really, because I wasn't writing a book. I was doing talks and just capturing experience. But eventually it became a book, and I was very proud for it to be sort of published about 18 months ago.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. I love hearing everyone's journey towards authorship, because I think, like you, I never expected to be an author, and it just sort of happened. And many people that I, especially a lot of veterans I speak to who are first time authors, they sort of wander into it, like you say, over a 6 year period or 10 year period. In my case, I was writing articles for 10 years and someone was like, you have to put all that in a book. I'm like, I had never really thought of that. So, you know, 10 years of work, now you suddenly have all this content that you've created. So I think that's fantastic. So help us understand why the title is called How to Climb a 12-Foot Wall.
Well, yes. Publishers advise that if you're going to write a book about leadership, you should have leadership front and center.
Yes.
So people Google, they will find your book. You probably don't write into Google all in the same boat if you want a book on leadership.
Right, right.
And you certainly don't write How to Climb a 12-Foot Wall. But I was quite passionate about that title, because it was where it all started for me. We mentioned that I was 16 when I joined. I was an apprentice. I was at the Apprentice College in Aldershot, home of the British Army at that time. I was on the assault course. It had two lanes. I was designated the leader at that time, and I wanted our team to win. And off we went across this assault course. And I can jump the ditch, and I can crawl under the low wire entanglement, and I can balance across the beam. I was leading from the front. That's what you do as a leader. And then I came to the 12-foot wall, and I had to stop. I had to turn around. I had to wait for the team. We had to help each other over. They had to lean over and grab me. And, you know, I was the last one over the wall. And that story really captures my first real thinking about leadership, about the fact that there are problems in life, there are obstacles in life that we can get over, that we can do ourselves. We just get over them. But there are other obstacles, like the 12-foot wall. The 12-foot wall is the only obstacle on the assault course that you can't get over on your own. You need a team. And the idea of learning to get a team to work together to overcome an obstacle was a great metaphor for my leadership journey and for the book. So I was quite keen on calling it that. And when I was talking with the publisher, and he'd taken the draft away, and he came back to see me, and it was like an exam. He sat there with this draft on his lap, and I thought he was just going to tell me, this is rubbish, and what are you wasting your time for? And he said, oh, I love the title, 12-foot wall. And I thought, oh, really?
Yeah.
And not only that, he then flicked through to the illustrations, the little drawings, and said, I think this should be on the front. So it was perfect that the wall became a thing. But it really is a great metaphor for how leaders need to get their teams to work together, all in one boat, you know, over that 12-foot wall. So that's where it comes from.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
As a leader, you're responsible for the mission and the people assigned to you. Regardless of the size of your team, employees are depending on you for their lives and careers. For the sake of your team and the people who entrust you with this role, you need to master the skills to become a great leader. best-selling leadership author John Rennie is proud to introduce the Qualified Leadership Book Series. This new series teaches you how to become a people-centered leader. Great leaders know that employees who are respected, appreciated, and allowed to grow will go the extra mile. These books provide real-world leadership wisdom written from a hands-on perspective. If you want to be a more effective leader, this is the one book series you should read this year. This three-book series contains the following best-selling leadership books: I Have the Watch, You Have the Watch, and All in the Same Boat, for one low price of $39.99. Begin your journey to become a leader worth following. Go to johnsrennie.com and get your order in today.
This episode is brought to you by Ignite Management Services. Ignite is led by Mike Watson, who you might remember from episode 137. Mike and his team believe that everything starts with leadership. Whether it's strategy execution or cultural transformation, it's the role of the leader to create the conditions for their people to succeed. The team at Ignite can help you develop critical habits to enhance your leadership capability and transform your business. Ignite Management is now offering the Resilient Leadership Assessment Tool. This is an online questionnaire designed to assess and guide leadership development, coaching, and team building. It provides leaders an opportunity to gain insights into their leadership strengths and development needs. After taking this assessment, you will receive a custom detailed report that provides practical and actionable recommendations to enhance your effectiveness. I have taken this assessment myself and found it to be extremely valuable in helping me make changes to my leadership approach. Right now, Ignite is offering 15% off the price of this tool to the Deep Leadership audience. Go to ignitemanagement.ca and enter the code START15 at checkout to get started today. This episode is brought to you by Jeremy Clevenger at Liberty Strength. As a high-performing leader, you know that leadership isn't about telling people what to do. It's about leading by example. And for most people, the one area that they are lacking when it comes to leading by example is their health and fitness. By improving your health and fitness, every other area of your life improves. Your energy skyrockets, your sleep improves, your confidence increases, and more. But how can you get and stay fit as a busy leader? Well, you do what you've always done. You hire the best people for the job. Don't struggle on your own. Put Liberty Strength in your corner. Jeremy and his team will work with you to take your physique, mindset, nutritional habits, and more to the next level with his step-by-step, all-inclusive coaching program. I've worked with Liberty Strength for the past 2 years, and I'm in the best shape of my life, and I'm still hitting strength personal records at 56 years old. If you want to step up your game, reach out to Jeremy at libertystrengthtx.com to find out more and get your initial consultation scheduled with him today. I love that analogy that there's some obstacles that you can't overcome by yourself. And I think we, more and more in the complexity of daily life, that I think we need the collective wisdom of a team to be able to make the best decisions for our organizations. And so those leaders who are still thinking they can do everything by themselves are going to find themselves at that wall at some point and wondering how they're going to get over. And they're going to start looking for their team and say, where's my help? Because they may have abandoned that team somewhere along the line. So I think I love the analogy of there are certain obstacles that only a team can overcome. And that's obviously a 12-foot wall is one of those things. So this book has got 10 lessons in it. Can you tell us about maybe one of those lessons?
I think when I look at it, I think the big thing that I draw out is that teamwork, is that that collective success. And certainly when I give talks about the book, I do focus a lot on the business of collaboration and teamwork. But another thing that I think comes from the book, a big lesson, is the business of the difference between a leader and leadership. I talked about leadership at the beginning and leadership potential. And my sense is that leaders are the people who hold responsibility. They're the people who make decisions. They're the people we look to for our vision and our guidance. But leadership is something that makes those things happen. And it runs throughout an organization. I've drawn a little slide of a piece of rock with the word running through the seam all the way through it. And I sense that that's how it runs. Leadership has to run like that throughout an organization. Mm. The leader will set the example, his or her personal example, honesty, integrity, transparency, how they operate. They will set the values and standards for the organization. They will lead the collaboration and the collective responsibility they hold. But leadership it runs throughout the organization. You can't deliver that vision without bringing people on board, within all the little departments and sections and different parts of an organization. There has to be leadership. It has to run through. And I think the way that leadership, that the tone of that leadership, the standards of that leadership is what the leader sets up. But I think that the importance of knowing and recognizing how your values and standards will replicate through an organization, will reverberate through an organization, is how you generate success. I talk about the fact that if the leader decided tomorrow that we all had to wear something purple, doesn't matter why, we're going to wear something purple to show something, some collective something. Now, the leader could say, wear something purple. It could say, send an order or a memo or some instruction out. But that doesn't make it happen. What makes it happen is in all those different departments and those different sections, people pick that up and say, this is good, this is important, this is part of our values, and we should all do this. So there's leadership running all the way through to make it happen. It doesn't just happen because the leader says so. Often people say to me, having left the army, it was easy for you in the army because you just ordered people to do things. You know as much as I do that giving orders is something that's few and far between. Direct orders you do give, and deployed in 2003 in a war, I had to give orders, formal orders. But the normal day-to-day way of making things happen is through leadership, is through inspiring and encouraging and empowering people to do things, as you were saying earlier. And I think that's the big lesson that comes from the book.
I really like that. I think one of the things that, you know, I think is one of the misconceptions about military leaders is that we had positional power, therefore we could just get anything done through you know, a command or an order. But I think one of the things I found too, similar to you, is that, I mean, people are people, right? And they're influenced. We have to be influential in our leadership style, regardless of our positional rank. And I think one of the things that stood out from what you're saying is I was thinking about, you know, for me at least, it was easy with smaller teams to motivate a group of people because I knew, like, you know, when I had small teams, I knew each person, I knew them well, I knew exactly how to talk to them to motivate them. But I was imagining, you know, one of the things I was thinking when you're talking was when you had that large group, when you were deployed, I mean, you giving a direct order, you know, has to get all the way down to the lowest, you know, ranked person in that group. But that's what you're talking about. That leadership has to run all the way through. So you can't just talk to one or two people. You know, it's I think what's one of the harder things to do is make that transition from leading a small team where you know everybody to leading like you said, over 1,000 people. That is, I think, it's much harder. For at least for me, I found that harder to do, and I had to make sure that I had people at the right levels that believed what I believe, that could translate what I was trying to do in the right way, and so that leadership did permeate all the way through to the lowest ranks.
Absolutely, that distributed leadership is yes, the way I sort of look at it. And you remind me of a conversation I had with the chief executive when I first moved into the health service out of the army. I was on that program I mentioned, And I was working very closely with a board in a National Health Service trust. And the chief executive and I used to have a formal, as part of the program, formal session each week. It was a great privilege. And I remember sitting down with him and saying, there are 7,000 people in this trust. How do you make sure they're all doing what you want?
Yeah.
Exactly this point. And he said to me that the most important job that he did was employ the right leaders across the organization.
Yeah.
And I felt, with everything else that he was responsible for, that was the most important task. And as you've said, and as I've tried to describe, it's those leaders all the way through who distribute and promulgate that leadership, that direction, that order, whatever it is that goes through. And when I'm talking to, I've done not many, but some talks to adults, to corporate organizations, and talks in the school where I work. And when I talk to young people, or anybody in the organization, wherever they are in the organization, I say, I'm not just talking to the front row. Everybody here has a responsibility to take this leadership, to ensure that things are that work through the organization, those values, those standards, that direction. So I think leadership is a distributed thing, whereas leaders, they hold the responsibility.
Yes, yeah. And the other thing I took away from that comment too is what you were talking about in terms of, if we mandate things as leaders, typically they don't get done. So I think even in the military though, I always think the most effective way that we lead is we inspire. And why we inspire by giving the stories and the reasons behind what we're doing. Like, for example, I run a factory, right? I own a manufacturing company. If I see an employee without a seatbelt on, that's a safety issue because they could potentially fall out and have a load fall on top of them. So I'll say to them, hey, make sure you get your seatbelt on and, because I don't want you to get hurt. So it's the why.
There's a reason, yes.
There's a reason behind it. And I think part of inspirational leadership or influential leadership, more like it, is getting that why behind why we're doing what we're doing. And I think the great leaders give you the why. So instead of just, we're going to wear purple today, like...
There needs to be, something that convinces people to carry that message and follow it on. Absolutely. Understanding what it's about. And communication and clear communication is a really key point. I talk about if you gave an instruction to seize the hill or take the hill or hold the hill or defend the hill or deny the hill, one word difference in that instruction, and yet there's a whole different thing. Even if you're not military minded, you can understand there's a difference between deny the hill and hold the hill, difference in resources, difference in time scale, and it's just one word. And the business of leaders making sure that they are very clear in their communication. If something has not happened in the way that you wanted, the first thing you should do is look back at the instruction you gave. Has somebody done it wrong because you didn't really make it clear what you wanted them to do?
Yes.
That's something that I ask people to do. So using those words and choosing those words very carefully, I think, is very important.
Interesting. I have a little bit in one of my books. I talked in the Navy, we had this thing called verbatim repeat back when we gave commands, especially around... the things that we're doing are very dangerous. And so you would give a command and the person would respond back with the exact words and then say, aye, sir, like they understood and like left full rudder, steady course 320, left full rudder, steady course 320, sir. And so there's verbatim repeat back. And I taught, we don't have that in business,
no.
But I do think that it's important that we are clear with our communications and B, that the people receiving the message understand the message. So give them that opportunity to say, do you have any questions or does that make sense to you? Or what are you thinking? Just because even though we don't have verbatim repeat back in organizations, we still should make sure our people understand. Well,
yes. Yeah.
What the
absolutely.
Directions were. Right.
Yeah. So,
yeah. That's really good. I think, but one of the things what you said stood out to me was the one word can change the why behind the command. So sometimes our words, we need to choose them carefully because they do impact a little bit of the meaning behind the word or the meaning for why we're doing what we're doing. So I do like that a lot, how each word sort of shifts a little bit of what the priority is and the reason behind
it. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
In particular, it can shift the priority or the urgency. And sometimes, you know, you've given some form of direction or instruction and it's not happened. And you're trying to understand why the fact that you thought it was important and the fact that you thought you conveyed that importance hasn't translated into action. But if you look back and if you're able to do that and look at the way you conveyed that message, you probably conveyed the message, but not the urgency. And sometimes those one word aspects can have a big impact.
Yeah. Oh, this has been fantastic conversation. There's so much here to unpack. The book, just for the listeners listening in, is called How to Climb a 12-Foot Wall. What are some, you know, we're kind of getting towards the end of our time here. What final message would you like to leave with our listeners about maybe your experiences, the book, or anything we've missed?
I think the one thing that really comes out from my mind is that leadership isn't something that we do and then leave. I use the example to try and elaborate. I do triathlon, and I have to train and practice and maintain my bike. I have to do all those things, and then I go to an event, and my performance, I hope, is as good as it can be. But my performance at that same event next year will only be as good as it can be if I continue to train and continue to maintain my equipment. And one of the things with leadership, I think sometimes people think that they're in a leadership position, so they have leadership. And I think that we should keep training. We should keep learning about it, keep reading about it, keep studying it, keep testing whether or not, you know, questioning whether we've given those instructions. So I think that leadership is something that we should keep alive, and we should accept that there's value in learning more about it. Assuming that we're in a leadership position and therefore we know leadership, I think is the start of a problem.
Oh, absolutely. And leaders, you're listening in, you're hearing that. It's about continuously improving, getting better, sharpening your saw. And you can't let it go. You can't ever, in fact, I've been doing, you know, leadership for over 30 years, and I would say I haven't found the end of the knowledge yet. It seems like it's an infinite ocean of knowledge that you can gain to make yourself better at influencing people towards getting difficult things done. So I love this. I love that closing comment, Bob. And again, one way you can get better is by reading books from experienced leaders that have gone before you. And this book, How to Climb a 12-Foot Wall, is a great way to learn these leadership lessons from someone who's been there and done that. So, Bob, how can people find out more about you and this new book?
Well, I've got the book sort of advertised on my website, 12footwall.com. It's available through Amazon, if you've heard of that, over in America. And it's also on sale at the Sandhurst Trust bookshop. So you can buy it directly from there as well.
Fantastic. We're going to go ahead and put links in the show notes for those resources. And again, leaders, you're here, you're listening to an experienced leader who is sharing a long journey, 37 years in the military, and then outside of that in health and education. What can you learn from someone like this? And again, this is how we get better as leaders. It's a continuous improvement. This is a great book to do that. I highly recommend you check it out. Again, the link's in the show notes right below. And again, click on it, and you know, we'll put links to Bob, and you can reach out to him and ask them some questions. If this resonated with you, if you want to have Bob come out and speak to your group, that's what you can do. You can, you've now met Bob. Now you can reach out and really meet him. So, Bob, I really appreciate you coming on the show. I think that you've given us a lot to think about and a lot of really good lessons in this book we haven't even touched on. So again, listeners, I recommend you go check it out. And if you really want to gain more from this conversation. So Bob, thank you for coming on the show. Thanks for coming on and sharing this new book and your perspective and your experiences.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again. Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Deep Leadership. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and share so we can continue to build a world with better bosses. Until next time, this is John Rennie saying take care and lead well.
Thank you for listening to Deep Leadership.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for all you do.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. For more information and updates, please visit our website at www.deepleadershippodcast.com or johnsrennie.com. Until next time, take care.
Are you passionate about saving the planet for future generations? Do you want to learn how to do it? If yes, then you need to tune in to the Nature Pact podcast. It's a talk show covering the changing world around us, from renewable energy, sustainable agriculture, circular economy, to ESG and social innovation. Don't miss this opportunity to discover how you can join the movement and make a difference. Subscribe to the Nature Pact podcast today on your favorite platform and get ready to be amazed.
Electric Acid. Welcome to the Candle Power Hour. Come with us backstage, behind the scenes of show business spanning over four decades and bringing you the experiences that can only be told by the people who were there.
Our guests are from the A-list, the F-list, and everyone in between. Get set for some of the most insane, hilarious, and inspiring stories you will ever hear.
I'm Mercury.
And I'm Diego.
Your host for the Candle Power Hour.